So now, Dante, I wanted to ask you, we've got 5-10 minutes here that, you know, let's get into it. You are not a Sasquatch guy. You didn't know anything about it. You thought, we were talking prior to this conversation, you thought there was one Bigfoot.
Yes.
That everybody referred to, like Harry and the Hendersons.
The world traveler.
So what say you now after this experience?
I mean, I was still a bit skeptical. I mean, like I said in the Q&A session there, I'm like, how could no one have any decent footage with the drones and the camera? I mean, people have like deer cameras everywhere and they move in the shadows and stuff and they bury their own, which again, like, it's like no one's found a skeleton. And it's like there's that many. Something would have been seen by now with all the technology, you know.
Bob, what do you think about his skepticism?
Dumbass motherfucker.
Fuck you, Bob.
What's up, you Sasquatch lovers? Welcome to the Basement Hangout, coming to you from somewhere in American suburbia. My name is Chad, and with me tonight is Dante.
Hello there.
How are you this evening, Dante?
Doing great. Happy to be back.
Good. We're happy to have you. Bob is out. He's traveling around the world. More important things to do, apparently, than the Basement Hangout. But he is, as usual, with us in spirit.
Red Solo Cup will fuck you up. It's time to party.
Our guest this evening is Mr. Jeffrey Lilly. Jeff, how are you this evening?
Hanging in there. How about you all?
We're doing great. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Now, you reached out to us. You told us you've had several experiences with Sasquatch. You have written, how many books now? Like a dozen?
Well, with Zombie Media Publishing, I've written probably 6 to 7. And then with Amazon as well, we partnered up. I've written probably close to 60 short stories, you know, and put them into book form.
That's impressive. So, Jeff, let's start out, if you wouldn't mind. Tell us a little bit about your experience with Sasquatch, you know, starting from the first experience you've had and moving on from there.
Okay, well, looking back, since I first started writing, I really don't even count the first one when I was like 10, and I would walk my sister home, you know, back and forth school each day. One day we were coming home and heard some wild sounds coming from the woods that surrounded our neighborhood. And rocks were thrown at us on, you know, several different times that day on the trip home. And then we were freaked out and were forced to, you know, flee immediately and run towards the house, which was only like a half a block away. So I really don't even count that anymore, looking back on, you know, everything, because I was so young. But a few years later, I would be fishing up at a place called Lake Cowan in northeastern Ohio. And as soon as we get there, my buddy throws a spoon right through my ear. So we had to rush back to the bait house. And at this point, I'm thinking, you know, hey, trip's over, let's go home. So they cut the spoon out of my ear at the bait shop.
So I'm sorry, on the way home, you said he threw a spoon through your ear?
Yeah, he put his lure on his into his rod. He went to cast it and put the spoon completely through my ear. So it cut that trip totally, you know, for me, I was done.
Yeah.
But on the way home, I allowed him to talk me into going to this other spot on the way home, which is still quite a ways out where we were at. Was like
were you looking to get an earring on that trip? Well,
say what?
Were you looking to get your ears pierced and have a nice earring on the end of that trip?
Yeah, right. I mean, immediately after I had told him not to, you know, to look out, you know, where he was casting, he put that first cast right, I mean, that spoon completely through my ear.
Ouch.
I mean, it ripped my hat off, it flung it out of the boat and everything. So I was mad, you know what I mean, more than anything. So I was just like, let's just go, you know, get this cut out of me, let's go home. So on the way home, you know, he'd known about another place called Todd's Creek. which is close to the Lake Catlin. And he's like, let's just stop there for a few. You know, the white band should be running. Let's just go check it out. So I agreed, you know, and we stopped. He knew the farmer that owned all the land there. It was a pretty good walk, you know, 500-600 yards to get to the spot that he wanted to get to. Well, long story short, we get there. We climb through the fence and get down into the creek. There's a waterfall there, about 20 foot high. It was a beautiful location. And he goes down below me, and I stay up near the waterfall. Well, you know, we're fishing for white bass. He's casting down below me, and I'm casting, and I'm looking off to the right of me. Well, about 10 minutes into this trip, I'm looking up, you know, just giving a look at the sun. And as I raise my head, out of nowhere comes a rock. Boom, lands right next to me. Well, immediately, I look down to him in reflex and, you know, and accuse him. Like, why are you throwing rocks? Why are you throwing rocks? And we're trying to fish. And he says, I didn't throw a rock at you. You see me. I'm here fishing. But, you know, I got both my hands on the pole. I wouldn't throw a rock, scare fish away. So I think nothing of it. But I'm already spooked because this thing didn't come from down below me. It came off from the side. And I'd seen it. You know, it come straight from the right side of the woods. So I think nothing of it. I try to push it away. About 10 minutes later, a bigger rock comes flying in and lands next to me, even closer. Now, this time, before I can even say anything to him, I look down to him, and his eyes are big as half dollars. And he's staring right at me. And we just booked it out of that spot because I guess he looked up my way and seen that rock coming too. And he knew that it come from the side of the woods. Now we're out in the middle of nowhere and there's nobody out here. It's 8 o'clock in the morning. So we, you know, longest trip of my life to make it back to that truck that morning. I mean, we struggled to get up off that bank because it was so muddy. By the time we were, you know, got out to it, to the bank itself, we got it so muddy from the water that was dripping off of us that we were slipping and sliding all over. So we struggled to get up out of there. So we, you know, we finally run back to the truck and both of us are spooked at this point. So we never go back there. Now this time, you know, I've already had that first incident as a kid. And then now this one, just a couple years later, I didn't see anything that day, but that was just wild how that went down.
Dante's kind of a novice in the world of Sasquatch. So I want to point out that it's a common theme that Sasquatches who don't want you around will throw pebbles, rocks in your direction. They won't necessarily hit you with them, but it's the, kind of their way of telling you, get out of here. And so at that point, had you been aware of that situation, that theme with Sasquatches, or were you still just wondering like, hey, this could be anybody out in the woods throwing rocks at us?
Well, what hit me was, you know, immediately came back to me what happened to me and my sister's kids, mm-hmm. you know, and how that thing had made them crazy noises as rocks were landing next to us. You know, this thing, when we were kids, it was throwing rocks and they were hitting real close to us, probably about 100 foot away in the section of woods in our town. That's what come flying back to me in that moment. So I put, you know, one-on-one together and knew in that moment that it was this time to get out of there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because back at that day, I had seen the outline of this thing, but I really didn't get a great description of it because its location that day when we were younger, it was so deep into that stretch of woods. You know what I mean? I could see the outline and everything of it, but couldn't get it in full detail. You know what I mean? And yeah. I was also young too. So, but I just knew that something wasn't right. You know, I just knew. So we quit fishing for a while after that. My next trip wouldn't be until I went, you know, with my dad and my two uncles. My uncle was a Vietnam veteran. He knew a buddy that lived on the Ohio-Indiana border. And they called his place Thomas Mountain. So we decided that, you know, for the first time, we're all going to go night fishing out there. So, and the mountain was pretty steep. It wasn't that high, but you couldn't pack a lot of gear, just the basics. So we get everything together, we get out there, and we go up to the top of this mountain, which it killed us to get up there. And up above, that's another lake. Lake one and lake two is what they call them. So we get up there, and we're day fishing. And then, you know, night comes. The cows are up there with us. And about midnight, they get up and they leave. Out of nowhere, they just got up and walked away and went up towards Lake Two. We didn't think nothing of it because, you know, they were always up there with us, but usually in the daytime. So about an hour later, we hear something coming down off the ridge from Lake Two. I thought it was a deer. Just by the way, it would move and stop, move and stop. And I thought maybe deer coming down to get a drink of water. So we just all continued to fish. This is still like a nightmare to me, all this.
Mm-hmm.
So we continued to fish. And then at about 2:33 o'clock, I decided I'm going to change over to crappie gear. I knew a hole on the left side of the lake was a little bit deeper. So I was going to make my move to go over there. Well, me and my Uncle Mike are talking at the front of the lake. And all of a sudden, we hear what sounded like a baby crying. And my Uncle Mike looks at me and he says, "You hear that? Do you hear that, Junior?" And I said, "Yeah, I hear it. What does that sound like to you?" He said, "It sounds like a baby crying." So it did it again. Now I'm freaked out at this point, you know. So I grabbed the lantern and my pole and I walk around to the left side, which on that side it was all woods. To the right side, it took you straight down to the Miami, Great Miami River. So I'm going around to the left-hand side to go to my spot. And as I raised the lantern, I put light on this thing. And it was squatted down. And it had its right hand in the lake, like it was getting a drink. And I looked over to the left, and this thing had a baby doe, a baby deer, a young one, less than a year old, held down by its throat. Now, this thing's realizing that I got light on it in this moment. So it opens its hand, and the water just starts pouring off of it. Hands are huge. And this thing squatted down is almost like it's almost my height. So I'm froze in fear. And it's turning its head over its left shoulder to see who's got light on it. And when its eyes put eye, you know, locked into my eyes, it was like it glowed a bright yellow off of the lantern light itself. And it opened its mouth and it let out a low growl. And then it kind of snorted at the end, like it was disgusted that it had been spotted. And then it looked over towards the woods or to its catch, whatever, because it had a baby doe in its left hand out on the ground. And it's trying to kick and get loose. Now I'm tripping. I'm thinking, in that moment, you're thinking, I'm seeing something that ain't supposed to exist. This is not supposed to be here. What am I seeing? You know, and then you think, am I crazy? And then, but to me, it kind of felt like in that moment, I was in a Hollywood movie scene, in a scene shoot, you know, for a movie. And I'm froze with fear. And my dad and uncles were like, I could hear him slowly coming into me. Like, what is that? Do you see that? What is that over there? So I break contact from this thing. And I just tell them to run. And they just went and jumped off the side of this mountain. And they hit the ground running. And I'm right behind them. Well, I get out in front of them. And I raise the light to see where we're going. Because it's thick woods all the way around us, all the way up to the top of this small mountain. And we all fell. They took me out from behind. And in that moment, we all tried to get up. And none of us could use our legs. It was like all muscle use of our legs was just stripped in that moment. So we fight and struggle for every bit of 15 minutes to get down off this small mountain. We finally do. And then the owner of the house, my Uncle Mike's friend, Tom, the old man, comes out. And then his neighbor comes out from to see what's going on. He lives to the, let's see, he would live to the right of Tom, about 100 yards away was his house. And he come running that way too. So Tom comes out, my Uncle Mike walks up to the porch, starts talking to him. And then the neighbor's over talking to me and my father and my Uncle Rocky. And I told him what was going on and what I'd just seen up there. And he just acted like this is a normal thing they've been seeing the past couple months. Now, mind you, this was in late September when most sightings usually happen. So the neighbor even made a phone call to the police, which they sent out a state trooper. I guess they had to because of the area that we were in. It was more or less if we were in the country. But it sat right on the border of Ohio and Indiana, which was like border. Basically, it was the city of Harrison, and it was right next to the Great Miami River. And so the state trooper pulls up and said that they've been getting a lot of calls as of late about the same things being seen all over that area. And then even says to the fact that you guys surely the hell don't want me to go up there and check this out, do you? You know, for one, it's a hell of a climb to get up there. And for two, I don't even have any backup, you know. And then old man Tom comes off the porch and walks over towards us all. And he said, I knew something was wrong as of late. He said, because I brought my quads up there, and lately I've been finding a deer here and a deer there dead with their heads twisted and their necks broken and their heads placed with their snouts and behind sitting on the back of their neck. And he found several like that just weeks prior to us going up there night fishing. But nobody had ever went up there and night fished. That was our first time ever. Nobody had ever been up there. So I just looked at it like it was just basically luck that that had went down the way that it did on that night. Because the way we were sitting was like in a bowl. And this thing had come down off the ridge. And I knew that. But it come down off that ridge, and we were downwind the whole time. So basically it come down and didn't even have no clue that we were there. Now, this is the first time that I've ever really seen one up close like that, that, you know, where I could see detail. And I wasn't no more than 40, a good 40 feet away from it. It wasn't like I was 100 yards.
Can you tell us a little bit about, I know it was nighttime and you were flashing a light, but what was the color of its fur?
Cinnamon brown fur with a hint of red to it. A beautiful, beautiful, you know, and this thing wasn't an adult. It wasn't full grown. This thing was probably 450, 500 pounds. I, you know, took it as to be a juvenile later on, you know, but it was still impressive.
Mm-hmm.
To say the very least, there was a coning to the head, but it wasn't like an intense coning, like, you know, I've heard others described, but definitely full on to the description of, you know, all the other stories and rumors that I've heard as up to late. But the layer of the fur, the way it was layered, it was, you know, it was late September. So I just took it to be as if, you know, it was putting on more hair or fur to get itself to be, you know, adaptable to what was coming, which was winter. You know, I mean, this is like the end of September.
So now you mentioned you heard baby crying sounds. Do you think that was the sound of the doe?
Yes, it was. Because when I got around to that side of the lake, it had done it again while its legs were kicking, trying to get out from this thing's grasp. As I put the lantern up on it, I seen its eyes well before, you know, I locked eyes with it, and it made out that last sound and started to kick its legs again to try to get free. But it wasn't going to get free from that grasp. There was no way. It was like this thing had hunted this thing methodically within like a 2-hour deal as it come down off of that ridge. It was either the deer that I'd heard, and we didn't hear that, you know, the Sasquatch, Bigfoot. I like to call them Sasquatch. So now I take it as if that was it hunting that baby doe as it was coming down probably to get water during the middle of the night, you know?
Yeah.
And then that time frame that it had sat there and hunted that thing, it got thirsty itself, and that's how I was able to catch it. It was getting a drink of water itself from the side of the lake. And the woods were only like 2.5 to 3 feet away from its right hand. Because that left side of the lake sat right next to those woods.
So now you all saw that, or you saw that crouching down, getting water, holding the doe down. And then your uncles came and you were like, let's get out of here. You guys ran. So you didn't see it get up from that position prior to jetting out?
This thing was like, I'll use the phrase that everybody else does in the country. It was like a deer in headlights. It would look at me, then it would look back towards the woods like it wanted to go, like it wanted to bolt, but it wouldn't go. It was almost as if it was scared to make a move itself. I don't know if it was afraid that it would, you know, have to leave that behind, its catch, to get up that hill, because that hill was straight up and straight down, you know, another good 1,500 feet up. So, you know, just looking back on it now that I put out the second book, which is basically a repeat of the first, but in, you know, totally full description of everything and every encounter as well that I've experienced.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like it just wasn't sure if it could make it up that hill with its hunt in its hand. So it was basically in that moment deciding on what to do. But my uncles had already, you know, like I said, I could hear them now coming into my right ear, like, you know, what is that? Do you see that? What is that, Junior? What the hell is that? And I just told them to bolt. So I feel like we acted before it had a chance to react itself and make its choice, you know?
Now, did you talk to your uncles about what everybody had seen after the fact?
Yeah. And the first thing they told me was, you know, they pulled me off to the side with Tom and they said, you know, we can't tell anybody about this. And I mean, you know, it's good on all the, you know, you've had the state troopers out here. So they've got wind of it now, you know, as far as they'll carry this story. Oh, well, so be it. But we need to keep this a secret, you know, because if we let this out, then everybody, you know, every time they can Harry that lives out in this area is going to be up on Tom's land poaching or trying to hunt these things, you know, and then that's going to make him mad. And not, and then in return, he's not going to let us fish here ever again. So I was forced to keep it a secret, which I did for about 20 years. And let me tell you what, it took me down some deep, dark roads. After you see what's not supposed to exist and you see it, it just takes you, it traumatizes you for one. I mean, and then for years, I was traumatized by it, having to suppress what I'd seen, you know, not be able to tell people. You know, had a fear of being ridiculed, thought you're crazy and what have you, you know, and you got your family members, you know, forcing the issue on you too. Like you can't say nothing. So, but I never went back and fished there ever again after that night. And I don't think they didn't either. You know, All the gear was left up there except for the lantern. And my Uncle Mike went back like a couple of days later and got, you know, the rest of the fishing poles and stuff. But I'm sure he was armed when he went up there. But I never went back there and fished ever again after that. Like I couldn't do it.
So now, have you had encounters after that?
No, all the encounters, I just basically gave you the rundown, basically in the buildup to the last one that I'd had, which was the best and most full on and the closest up. You know, I'd had several more encounters, same way with rocks being thrown at me while out fishing. Most of the time I was by myself when these things would occur on Devil's Backbone as part of a creek out in Claremont County. Same thing. I was by myself though. And I threw my pole out to start fishing for, you know, bass and crappie. And as soon as my bobber hit the water, a rock hit. And then 5 minutes later, did the same thing, and another rock hit. So I was out of there. I mean, I've had several rock throwing incidents in my life. And like I said, the first one that we'd seen as kids, you know, I don't even really count that, even though I put it in the book. And I try to just, you know, describe it in the outline to the best of my ability, what I seen that day. But, you know, you lose sight after all those years of being that young.
So, yeah, I know it's been a while, but I did want to ask you, did it look more like a human with lots of hair, or did it look more like an animal?
These things look like they're basically a hybrid form of a human. You know, the skin is like a darker tan, a few shades darker. Almost like the color of leather is what I took from it. And as well on this face up right below the eyes, you know, the bottom eye socket itself, there was two patches of, you know, skin on each side, which had hair mixed in with it as well and patches. And then the rest of the body was basically, you know, a thick layer of hair or fur, which, you know, it looked like fur to me pretty much at that point in time. But that's what we, you know, upon doing research, you know, for years after that, it is believed that they throw on, just like every other animal of the forest, a thicker, you know, coat to sustain them through the winter. So, but this one didn't smell like all the other, you know, stories I've heard, you know, heard about, read about, whatever. But in this case, everything around us was basically covered in water. So I looked at it as if this thing had to come through Lake Two's water to get there, or it had to come through some section of the Great Miami River that wrapped all the way around the bottom of his property to get to that location. It was all water, basically, all the way around. So, but just massive and impressive. The muscle build was in just intense. Like, I just remember when my legs came out from underneath me, the first thing I thought was, we're all dead. We're going to die. There's probably a whole clan of these things coming down to get us right now as we speak, you know? And it rung through my head the whole time I was going down that hill. I thought, this is just it. It's over. And you get that big feeling of gloom. And then there's nothing you can do to control it, though. So you just basically give up. But then, right when I said hell with it and I gave up, I got used back of my legs and so did they, you know? And then to get down there and be told to shut up, keep it a secret, it just really weighed on me over the years.
Yeah, I understand. That's rough when you have to hold something like that, especially if you think people aren't going to believe you, you know, that you're going to be crazy, this and that and the other thing.
That was the biggest thing that worried me, you know, because, you know, I was always a sound mind growing up, you know, like I just couldn't believe that someone would be labeled as crazy because they seen something that wasn't supposed to exist, you know, because like I said, growing up, I was never a believer. I'd been told stories, you know, about my father and his brothers, which were my uncles that were out there at night. They grew up in West Virginia, back with West Virginia. And they, my Uncle Jack, which is my Aunt Brenda, my dad and brother's sister, who married my Uncle Jack, was an Arkansas boy. And he'd even told me stories about being with dad and all of them hunting in West Virginia and Arkansas both. And there would be nights they would feel like they were being perilous and be ran up out of the forest while they were hunting.
Yeah. So we do have the luxury this evening of having Dante here, who is very unversed in the whole Sasquatch topic. So I want to throw it over to him to ask any questions he may have.
I do have a couple.
Get right up on that mic, Dante.
If you had to guess or estimate, how many do you think there are, I guess, both in your area, like the greater Ohio area, as well as the country and the world? I mean, like, how many are we talking about here?
We'll be back with more after these messages. If you want an ad-free, higher quality audio version of this and all our episodes, as well as VIP episodes, sign up for a Basement VIP subscription on Apple Podcasts or at patreon.com/thebasementhangout.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
My personal opinion, I would say, and I've done a lot of research as of late. I'm not a pro, you know, mind you, but I would have to say anywhere between 5,000 and 30,000. I know a few other guys who I'm pretty close with that would go from 5,000 to 60,000, you know, just because of the year that we had too, as well with COVID, nobody being out there in the woods, that they may have had a, you know, a better mating season, you know, that year and a half ish, you know, that nobody was out there. But I'm telling you, they're all, I mean, they're from what I've seen And then the people that I know as well that live deep down in Kentucky, like my publisher, Thomas Markham from Zombie Media Publishing, he is a well-known, renowned researcher down there in Harlan, Kentucky. And he's got massive cast prints, and just an unimaginable, collection of, evidence and footage as well. He shoots films down there too. So, and even Doug Hychek, you know, from Monster Quest, I teamed up with him initially to do a book, and he even said he thought 5,000 to 60,000.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. The question is, you know, with all the technology and cameras, satellite footage, drones, like how has it not come to pass that we don't have a better picture than, was it the one from like the '70s that I've seen, you know, with that grainy,
the Patty film.
Yeah. Like
the Patty film.
Why have we not got a better picture since then? Your opinion? Like what's the issue?
And that's why I was always a non-believer, you know, growing up, even through my teenage years, I felt that way. But lately, you know, looking at that Patty film, they tried to tear that film apart time and time again, and they cannot disprove it to this day. Now I've seen many other films, as well that were put together videos, and you can say without a doubt, most of them are faked, but I just don't see that Patty film is faked. And as far as technology, myself, in my opinion, I personally feel that it's all about the luck of the draw with these things. These things are intelligent. They're very smart. I know what I've seen that night. Now I'm saying, I think these things stay well put, well hidden until nighttime, until the early hours of the morning when they know we are all deep asleep and not in the woods before they come out and make their moves to hunt and get water.
That was my next question. Like what's the intelligence level you think? Like, you know, like, I know they rank different animals and talking about half human. Like, do they have like subhuman level intelligence that they're outsmart every other animal out there? Or are we?
I personally believe that they do because I know that this thing hunted a deer that night and was able to track one down and catch it, even though it was a young deer, mind you. It was still able to track down and hunt one in the night, which leads me to believe that they're nocturnal pretty much. And that's why they do the things the way that they do. And they are often seen, you know, accidentally on accident during the nighttime, during a drive or a stroll out, walking the dog, what have you. I mean, like it's mostly of the nighttime when these things are being seen. I just think that their, you know, intelligence is just great enough for them to just stay just outside of the realm, you know, of us getting that considerable footage or even a body. You know, so to speak.
Right.
I feel like they do the same thing that cougars do when they're dying. You know, either they take their own and bury them in when they die deep into the woods, you know, or they travel off like a cougar, or, you know, or any other predator that's, you know, intelligent, and just they go so deep that they're never, you know, their bones are never found, you know. They're a very smart creature, you know.
Are they self-aware of like they're like existence? You know, I feel like most animals be like, he's dead, we'll move on, but they're like smart enough to be like, we need to keep ourselves in hiding.
I think it's just all about survival, you know.
Yeah,
I believe that they were here well before us, well before the Native Indians, and I feel like it's just all about them and, you know, being in survival mode, like we would be in flight or fight or flight mode during a robbery attempt or something. You know, they're just trying to sustain themselves. Now see, I, you know, and like I said, it's like a catch 22 for me, because I was always a non-believer until I actually seen what I seen up there. And once you see it, you can't explain it away.
Yeah.
And it just makes the whole damn thing ironic, because, you know, that's why when I decided to first write my books, I figured I would go ahead and just put out a kid's book first, you know? And, so I did that. And then after that, I seen how the public took to it. And then I decided to go ahead and do a tell all about my encounters and what I'd seen that night and leading up to that night. And then wrote several after that, you know, a mixture of kids' books and adult books as well. So, and then even, you know, with what I've known and learned over the years, I've even made some not only non-fictional books about, you know, the truth of the whole ordeal. I've even went, you know, further and made fictional books that would be, you know, more entertaining to the teen, you know.
So while we're on that subject, why don't you go ahead and tell the people what your books are called and how we can find them?
Well, I have several. Like I said, I did get down the road of addiction after going through all that process with what I went through on that mountain at night. So I wrote several books about addiction as well. But
let's drill down in that. What were you addicted to?
I was addicted to everything I touched. Just trying to suppress, you know, the guilt, the fact that I was being told to keep everything a secret. I just let everything in that overwhelm me.
Yeah.
And it just took me down several deep, dark roads. So I've been clean for 8 years, and I put out two books about, addiction and recovery and how it is all possible if one's ready. And then I put out my first kid's book as well.
Well, congratulations on that. That's awesome. Good for you.
But the main book, and I appreciate you guys very much for that. The main book about the encounters, the true story, is Blessed and Cursed by Jeffrey Lilly. That's over at Barnes & Noble, Joseph Beth Booksellers, and Amazon, as well as the others. They're all at the same location.
So our listeners can actually just look up Jeffrey Lilly and
Jeffrey Lilly books. Yep, online.
And they'll find your all your books. How many have you published at this point?
I have six. I'm working on 7 and 8. They're finished now. They're being published as we speak by Tommy Media Publishing. 60 in total altogether.
60?
Longer, shorter. Yeah.
Jesus, that's impressive.
60?
Well, I'll tell you what 16? Happened. Here's what happened real quick.
That's what I thought I heard. 60? 60?
16.
Yes. Wow. I went to a room and just started writing and didn't come out.
You went full Stephen King in there.
Yes, I did. Well, I lost my brother to addiction. And then I lost my father and my mother back to back, October and December. And it sent me into a room by myself. And, I just was in a state of almost, coming to having a full-blown mental breakdown. So, and then my fiance at the time got really sick as well, which put the icing on the cake. And I just decided to make a move. It was time to tell a story before something happened to me, God forsake. So I wanted to get it all out there.
Well, good for you, man. Yeah. That's impressive that you've written. I still don't know. Is it 60 or 16 books?
It is 60.
Wow. What?
Well, most of them, like I said, short stories. Most of them are 80 pages, 90. Some are 100, 110. The kids' books are like 30. They don't go to extent page
wise.
Crazy. Because I want the kids to be able to read. Or their parents be able to read to them without them being, distracted by the length of the pages that are written that they have to read. So yeah, keep it short, but sweet. That was my motto going in. Keep it short, but keep it sweet.
So
keep
Bob, even though Bob's not here, I still want to ask him, Bob, what do you think about the idea that somebody could write 60 books?
The fuck?
Thank you, Bob. Thank you. I mean, that is super impressive. Good on you.
Yeah.
I couldn't write one book. I'll tell you that much. I don't even know how to get my thoughts down on paper. So let me ask you this. First of all, I have two questions for you. Number one, the Ohio Grassman, because you're in Ohio, right?
Yes, sir.
So the Ohio Grassman, is that something you're familiar with?
Yes, sir.
So what can you tell me a little bit about that and how you think that might relate to your encounters?
Well, from the one I've seen, I'm going to say, I think there's different clans of these things, that offset. I don't think they're all built exactly the same, but I do believe pretty much to a certain extent they are. Seen a lot of footage on the Ohio Grassman, some fake, and some pretty decisively video. But they are two in the same, and I do believe that they run up air around Salt Fork Lake as well. Like I said, the one that I had seen was basically 45 minutes outside of Cincinnati,
Yeah. So can you tell Dante, he's not familiar, can you tell Dante what the Ohio Grassman is, what that's all about?
Basically a Bigfoot, a Sasquatch, built somewhat similar to Patty, except for she was a female and this one was a male. I believe that there's more than one up there. I think there's a clan of maybe four or five up there roaming about. It's been seen, a lot of tracks been taken from up in that area, a lot of sightings as well. It's just all about the luck of the draw with these things. You need to be near deep woods. You need to be near a water source. You need to be near a game trail all at one time. I think that's your best chance to be able to see one of these things. And as well, make it between 2 to 6 a.m. in the morning.
Mm.
That is my personal belief.
So the other question I have for you is, you know, the typical question, what is Sasquatch?
I'm just going to keep that short and sweet and say a hybrid form of human.
Okay.
Somewhere along the line, they messed up in a chain. Like, I think it was somewhere in the realm before Gigantopithecus. And it was dismissed. It was just basically missed.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like somewhere down the line, you know, with all these new researchers out there and these serious organizations, and we're going to say technology has brought this a long way as well, I feel like it'll come sooner than later. Just because there's so many more people out in the field these days.
Yeah. So what about the woo aspect of this, where people see lights and they have, you know, fantastic encounters that include strange behavior, strange happenings? What about that? How do you feel about that? Did you ever see lights and stuff?
No, I'm going to have to say on other video information that I've studied about and seen as well, I've seen, you know, lights, and Les Stroud's even talked about them, Survivor Man, seeing lights and orbs. I personally have seen one, you know, in the middle of the afternoon, no light there. And that night, no, I did not see any light as well. But I feel like pretty much with the UFO activity, I feel like they are just intrigued by this species as we are. I don't believe that they are interconnected, you know, in a way. Yeah. I just feel like they are intrigued by this species as well as we are.
So you don't believe Sasquatches are like interdimensional or any of that kind of stuff? They're just an animal that's out in the forest that we haven't gotten our hands on.
From what I've seen.
Yeah.
You know, especially that night, the way that that thing posed up and tried to scare me away as if to say, hey, you better go.
It was very physical.
This is my catch. Very physical creature. The way that its body is designed is perfect for hunting and speed and agility, killing. I mean, just pure power. And this thing wasn't even fully grown, I don't think. This thing was a young juvenile, you know. I couldn't give you the age, but I'm going to say teenage years, somewhere about that. But this thing was monstrously built. I mean, very impressive. At least four foot broad in its chest. That's, you know, and it's immense calf muscles and hands as well.
So now this is something I do for all. I'm sharing my screen. Can you see this?
Yeah.
So this is Todd Standings. I don't know where you stand on this. I bring this up for all of my guests who are knowledgeable in the Sasquatch area. When you watch this, and you'll hear a bunch of sound here, I'm going to turn that down because it's not relevant. It's just birds chirping. When you see this where Todd Standing claims that this was video he captured of a Sasquatch, and there's a lot of debate and controversy about whether he faked all of this and this is him in a mask. When you see this, does this look anything like what you saw in your experience? Obviously, this one looks like maybe it would be an older Sasquatch. But there it is. It's apparently staring at Todd Standing in the distance. And we have the copyright there.
That shot there is very similar, but the color is all a little bit more different. If you put cinnamon brown with a tint of red on that, it's pretty close. Now, you know, I've seen almost every piece of Todd's footage. And even like Les said, it's hard to discount it and it's hard to prove it too. But I would personally have to say it's close. You know, but I'm just at that same point with everybody else. I can't say it's fake. I can't say if it's real, because the big thing that hurt Todd was, you know, everyone starting to rumor that his sister was this special effects makeup, individual, you know, that worked in Hollywood at some point. I think that's what really hurt Todd's mm-hmm. whole persona, you know, that everybody takes from him. But he's definitely put boots on the ground. He's done a lot of hard work over the years. You know, and even Les said, I can't disprove the fact of what he has filmed. You know, I couldn't prove it or disprove it. So I'm just along the page with everybody else. But it does look very similar to what I've seen. But what I've seen had a little bit of a meaner look to it, you know, and like I said, different color. But the one I seen was clearly upset because I'd come across it while it was hunting. And it let me know.
Yeah.
Sure enough.
Does that look more like what you saw versus like what the Hollywood, you know, like Harry and the Hendersons and like Jack Link beef jerky commercials? Like, Nothing like that at all whatsoever.
I would have to say like the Patty film itself, but the hair a little longer and maybe a little more thick as well as being, you know, it being a cinnamon brown color as well.
And do you think they're aggressive or like if you weren't, you know, on their territory, would they be an aggressive animal or were they more just, you know, hey, trying to protect their own area?
I think they're just trying to protect their own. That's what I really firmly believe. I feel like they're trying to protect their own. I feel like every time that I've come through the wrong area at the wrong time, I feel like I've been warned, you know,
like the rocks are a warning, not like trying to like make your, crush your head with a stone. Yeah.
Right. Well, they, you know, I feel like if they really wanted to take you out, they could, you know, from a certain distance. But even the one that night that I walked up on like that and froze, you know, it could have let that baby deer go and it could have took me out if it wanted and probably the rest of my family as well. But it chose to stay like a deer in headlights. It did not move. It did not bolt through the woods. It made sure it kept eyes on its kill and had it in its grasp until we were gone. So I don't feel like they're personally very aggressive unless they're forced to do, you know, to have to be.
I appreciate your experience. And I wanted to point everybody to go to, actually the best way is just to go to Amazon.
Yeah.
And search Jeffrey Lilly, right? And they're going to find all of your books available for purchase. Does that include Kindle?
Yeah, Kindle's free.
Free?
On most of them. Yeah, some of them are free. If you own Kindle, it's free. If you don't own a Kindle, it's like $2.99, $3.99.
Why are you selling your books for free?
Well, Kindle, that's Amazon's way of getting customers. If you own your Kindle device, then you can read for free.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Pretty much for me, it wasn't all about the money. Is, you know,
I
wanted to get my story out there to everybody, you know, but then pushed along, you know, my journey. Like, as you just said, why write your books for free? You know, I put a lot of hard work into it. So recently, you know, we decided that we're going to go that route just because I've chosen to make writing, you know, pretty much my career for the moment.
Well, I wanted to, because I did notice that your books aren't yet on Audible, right? You don't have them yet.
Right.
Audiobook available?
Oh, there's many. When you go to that link, it's going to show you the ebooks as well from the books that are published. They're both on there. They're ran together.
I wanted to put up there that Dante is willing to be the voice of your Audible books if you're willing to put them up.
Yeah.
Would you do that?
Yeah.
Because I personally like audiobooks. I put my AirPods in my ears at night and I listen to books, but I know that you need somebody to read them out. And Dante has a very nice voice. Dante, can you give us an example?
It was a dark night. Sasquatch was lurking in the woods.
You got to do better than that, dude.
Yeah.
He's got the voice board.
I did some work.
Yeah, he just... Yeah,
I'll work on it.
He's new to this. He needs to learn to get his face right up on that microphone.
Yep.
Let's try it again. Oh, who's it's that perfect. Who liked his voice? Is that your wife?
That's my fiance.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dante, it sounds like Jeffrey, you got some competition.
Yes, sir.
Well, listen, I want to thank you so much for coming on with us. I really appreciate you reaching out. for anybody else who's listening, if you have a story to tell, reach out to us at connect@thebasementhangout.com. And definitely go check out Jeffrey Lilly on Amazon. Buy his books. You son of a bitches, just do it. So Jeffrey, if you've been listening to the show, you know that we end the show with words of wisdom. Would you like to go first, or would you like us to start?
Well, I don't know. I guess I'll go first.
Yes, please.
Famous quote, my father always said, believe nothing what you hear and only half of what you see.
Wow. I like that, actually.
That was always big for me growing up.
That's short and sweet. Believe nothing that you see and only half of what you hear. Did I get that right?
Believe nothing what you hear and only half of what you see.
Oh, okay. All right. Nothing that you hear and half of what you see.
Believe nothing that you hear and only half of what you see.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. I think that's true.
I grew up in a town full of drama. You know what I mean? A lot of cheaters and shit like that. So that's where that come from.
Yeah, I hear you. Dante?
I'm going to add, where there's smoke, there's fire. I mean, there's something obviously going on here. So I'd like to learn a little bit more about it and appreciate your time. Thank you.
Dante, yes, sir, I like that. You. Those are very nice words of wisdom for a Sasquatch novice. Where there's smoke, yes, there's sir. Fire. Very nice.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Just dig deeper. You'll see.
Yeah.
Yep. My words of wisdom are very surface. I am smoking ribs this evening, Jeffrey. That is going to be our dinner for postcast. So I want to tell the people how to do it. So what is you take your baby back ribs. Obviously, you cut the film off the back. You throw your rub on there. You put them in at about 200 degrees, high smoke. You let them do that for about an hour. Then you take them off and you put some butter on. Then you put them back in. Raise the temperature to 225 for another 2 hours. After that, take them off. Wrap them up in tin foil, put butter in the tin foil with barbecue sauce and your favorite seasoning and a little bit of honey. Let that run for another 2 hours at 225. Then take it off, unwrap them, and sauce them. Good to go.
Smoke meat every day.
Actually, I do have that sound effect from you. Your words of wisdom.
Smoke meats every day.
This is something Bob said. This is something Dante said.
Smoke meats every day.
Smoke meats every day.
Yes.
Appreciate that. So, Jeffrey, thank you so much for hanging out with us tonight in the basement, in the hangout. And we're going to send people your way. And you have a good night.
Okay, brother. Thank you all for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. So now, Dante, I wanted to ask you, we've got 5-10 minutes here that... You know, let's get into it. You are not a Sasquatch guy. You didn't know anything about it. You thought, we were talking prior to this conversation, you thought there was one Bigfoot.
Yes.
That everybody referred to, like Harry and the Hendersons.
The world traveler.
So what say you now after this experience?
I mean, I was still a bit skeptical. I mean, like I said in the Q&A session there, I'm like, how could no one have any decent footage with the drones and the camera? I mean, people have like deer cameras everywhere, and it's for me hard to believe.
And what was the answer to that? I don't remember.
That they're just very aware. Stealthy. And just like they move in the shadows and stuff, and they bury their own, which again, like, it's like no one's found a skeleton. And it's like Harry died in the lake when he go get his body before the humans see him and bury him in private in a secret Bigfoot burial ground. You know, it's like, it's just, there's that many, something would have been seen by now with all the technology, you know, satellites, drones, people have hunting cameras.
So you're still a big
home
time
cameras.
Non-believer.
I'm still a non-believer. Yes. Am I completely, opposed to the possibility? No, but like I said, I'm more of a skeptic of things like aliens and Bigfoots and Loch Ness monsters.
I think it's
and
big stuff feet. Like that.
Big Phi. I don't know. I just, Yeah, I feel like, you know, back in the day, maybe it was possible because technology was shit. Like that video I'd seen, you know, from way back, you know, that was very unconvincing. Even the video you showed me, you know, I hadn't seen that before, but I mean, like, that could be like a extra from Planet of the Apes, you know, like.
Bob, what do you think about his skepticism?
Dumbass motherfucker.
Fuck you, Bob. Say it to my face.
Well, hey, thank you for filling in. You've been a good fill-in as always. And one of these days, the three of us are
going to do this together. Threesome. Man. Yeah. So,
do not say such things.
Don't cross the swords.
All right. Basement hangout.
Ow.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.